Welcome to this episode of Out of the Best Books, the podcast where we deep dive into classic literature and have conversations about what we've learned and discovered along the way. We love all things books and reading, and we want to share our love of the classics with you. We hope to inspire you to read along with us and join in the conversation. I'm Laura.
And I'm Amity. Let's get started.
Here we go.
Yes.
Part two.
It's so good, and it's like so many of the other ones that we've done. The more we get into it, the more we love it. I've just been really happy and pleasantly surprised this time reading through. I think I mentioned it in our first episode of this one, but it's like everything else. It's like learning a language. And the more that you do it, the easier it becomes, to where you don't even have to think about it anymore. And not saying that I don't have to think about it when I'm reading Shakespeare, but I've read it enough to where I can read through it and I'm like, I get it. And this is awesome. Again, there's always more to learn, and there's a lot of like cultural references and things like that that you can certainly dive deeper into, maybe don't completely understand, but for the most part, you understand what is going on, what they're saying, and it's just really delightful. So
my favorite one is that having a toothache is like being in love.
There are so many good, oh my gosh, there's so many good lines in here.
I know, you know, my favorite part of this section is very strange, and I'll tell you when we
okay
get it. But it's like I kind of started it and I was like, oh, you know, this isn't that exciting, and then I was like, this is actually hilarious.
Okay, I'm excited. One thing that I do need to bring up really quickly, sort of a disclaimer, is we recommended the movie that starring Kenneth Branagh and Emma Thompson, and it's just a star-studded cast in general, the Much Ado About Nothing. And then I found out there's nudity in the very beginning. I think that there's some butts. So I don't know. And here's the thing. I am horrified and I'm really sorry. Whenever I watched it before, we always skipped the first part. And so I just, and it's been years. And so I just didn't remember that at all. No recollection at all. But then when Laura brought it up, I was like, oh my gosh, that's why we always skipped the first part. I did not remember that at all. So I'm really sorry. I think that is, so if you skip the first few minutes, you're good. But,
well, now you know why maybe your mom was skipping the beginning. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and now that you jog my memory, it's like, oh yeah, that is why. And there's another version of it too that's like, it's really good. It's really good. It's black and white, although it's modern. And everybody is wearing like modern clothes. I just don't remember when it was made. So I may have to look that up, because that one I know for sure is like completely clean the whole way through. There's nothing questionable at all. So I'll look that up, and then maybe we could put it in the show notes, or maybe by the end of this episode, I'll have figured that out. But anyways, it's another really, really well done one.
Okay. It looks like there's one in 2012.
I think that's it. Is that the one does it say it's black and white?
I mean, it looks black and white. Yeah, it looks like it's black and white, but it's,
yes.
Josh Whedon, let's see.
Yes, I think that's it. The other one that we recommended with Kenneth Branagh and Emma Thompson was made in 1993. There's also, like you say, Keanu Reeves, Denzel Washington.
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton. There's also like Kate Beckinsale, Robert Sean Leonard. I mean, it is quite the cast. So skip those first couple minutes and you're good to go. But then, yes, this one, Much Ado About Nothing, 2012. It was also very, very well done. And it is black and white, but they're wearing modern clothes. I recognize the guy who plays, but I can't remember his name. Alexis Denisov, Nathan Fillion plays Dogberry. Anyways, yeah, it's very good.
Now so. I have to look, watch that one. Okay.
Yeah.
If that's okay, I'll start with Act 2, Scene 2, and I'm just going to give a really quick summary of it. Where we left off was the wedding. They had decided to get married, and the wedding is going to happen in a week. And
yes,
Don Pedro had come up with this plan to like occupy themselves throughout the week to get Beatrice and Benedict to not hate each other.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
To fall in love.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And then he's recruited everybody to help him. So Don John has learned about Claudio and Hero getting married, and he wishes that he could figure out a way to prevent it. And so his servant, is it, do you say that Baracchio?
I say it Baracchio, but it might be Baracchio. I can't remember. I need.
I'm going to say his servant Baracchio. I don't know. Comes up with a plan. And so he is the lover of one of Hero's servants, Margaret. And the plan is that Don John will go to Claudio and Don Pedro and tell them that Hero is not a virgin, but she's this loose woman that has like given herself away before marriage and that she's been unfaithful to Claudio. Now, Don John is going to bring Don Pedro and Claudio to like underneath Hero's balcony the night before the wedding, and they will just need to be there to watch what's going to happen. So the plan is that they're going to look up and they're going to see in the balcony that Baracchio is making love to Margaret, who will be wearing Hero's clothes. And there was a complicated sentence in there, and I was, maybe I'm going to ask you about it. So they're going to see a woman up in the window that looks like Hero, and she's going to be making love with Baracchio. And then they're going to believe what Don John has told them about Hero being unfaithful. So Don John, and there's a sentence later in the play that is hilarious, but Don John promises Baracchio a large reward if it works and he's able to prevent the wedding from happening. When he's explaining what's going to be happening, he's like, she's going to call, they're going to hear him call her Hero, call Margaret Hero. And then it said something about, and she's going to call him Claudio.
Which it's like, well, how is he going to convince her to do that? But it somehow works out.
Well, like it said Claudio, and I'm like, she wouldn't be calling him Claudio because Claudio's the one down under the window watching. She would be calling him, and is Baracchio claiming that it's him up there in the window, or is he pretending to be somebody else?
Well, he's pretending to be, he's just pretending to be somebody else.
Not himself. Okay.
Yeah, you're right. That doesn't. Okay, so they will scarcely believe this without trial. Offer them instances which shall bear no less likelihood than to see me at her chamber window. Hear me call Margaret Hero. Okay, that makes sense. Then hear Margaret term me Claudio. But that wouldn't be her being unfaithful if
He
she's
thinks he's
calling him
Claudio.
Claudio.
Yeah.
Laura. You just found a glitch. You found an issue with Shakespeare. I don't know.
I'm very confused. Maybe I'm not as dumb as I know. I'm just thinking. But I was just like, doesn't make any sense because he's down there listening and she should be calling him something else. And then also, like you said, how's he gonna convince her? Because she's not aware that she's playing this trick.
Yeah.
So, good question, right? But I just wondered if that's like a misprint or like just not understanding the.
Well, except we have two very different versions and they have the same thing. So I don't think it's a misprint.
How's he gonna get her to not be alarmed when he calls her Hero? She's gonna be like, what? I'm not Hero.
Well, because Margaret is a very like faithful servant to Hero, so you can't think that she would just go along with it,
Right.
purposely trying to deceive her.
So maybe there wasn't any like shouting of names going on, really.
I don't think so. I think that maybe that's just his way of telling them what's going to happen.
Okay. And the other thing I think is hard about reading a play, I don't know if you think this, but like when you're reading a book and you've got all the words in there that are like so and so said this and then this person and this person, you really have to pay attention to who's talking a
Yes,
play.
for sure.
You
For
have to
sure.
look at who's there, who's left. I get kind of confused by that.
Yes, and it's like you have to imagine all the different possibilities. Like, who is it that they could possibly be saying this to? Who are they most likely saying this to? I don't know. There's just a lot, especially with Shakespeare. There's a lot to try to consider and to keep track of. So, this is really funny. This is now in Leonato's orchard, and Benedick is there, and there's a boy in the orchard, and basically, he wants to be alone. So, he sends the boy off to get his book or whatever. And then he says, I do much wonder that one man, seeing how much another man is a fool when he dedicates his behaviors to love, will, after he hath laughed at such shallow follies in others, become the argument of his own scorn by falling in love. And so he's basically thinking about why is Claudio doing exactly the thing that he's made fun of other people for doing? Claudio has seen how foolish men are when they fall in love. And now here he's doing the exact same thing. It's like, Benedict? Don't speak too soon.
It's
But
like somebody saying, My kids will never do this.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Totally. And he just talks about how like he is not vulnerable to this same folly. He says, one woman is fair, yet I am well. Another is wise, yet I'm well. And when he says I'm well, like basically he's unmoved. Like he can recognize that a woman is beautiful, that she's smart, but it doesn't do anything to him or for him. It doesn't change him in the way that it's changed Claudio and other men that he's seen. He says, another virtuous, yet I am well. But till all graces be in one woman shall not come in my grace. Rich she shall be, that's certain. Wise, or I'll none. Virtuous, or I'll never cheapen her. Fair, or I'll never look on her. Mild, or come not near me. Noble, or not I for an angel. Of good discourse, an excellent musician, and her hair shall be of what color it please God. I don't know. That just like, it kills me. The whole thing. He has his list. He has his list. Just like, you know, girls always have their lists. Well, Benedict has his list too. And he's like, all these things have to be in the same woman or it's just not even worth my time. It's like, dude, do you have all those things? Okay. It's just really funny though. At the end, he's like, I don't care what her hair looks like. I don't care what color her hair is. That's all.
If she has all these things, what does the color of her hair matter? And he's like, I'm never going to find anybody with all those things. So it's like, what is the movie where the girl makes a list and like, oh, I can't even think of it, but I could picture it. The man like shows up with everything on her list. Oh, yes.
Oh.
It's the Practical Magic.
Oh, okay. I've heard of it. Maybe you're the one who told me about it. Okay.
Oh, it's such a good movie with Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman. And they're witches. And when they're little girls, they do this like potion where they pick what they want in their husband. And it's like impossible things.
Yeah.
Like a green eye and a blue eye and whatever, you know, and shows up.
But this guy shows up with all the things. That's really funny. I need to look into that.
You should watch that 100%. That movie is amazing.
Remember that Benedict is there in the orchard. And all of a sudden, Don Pedro, Claudio, and Leonato come. Okay. And right before that, it says that Benedict withdraws. In other words, he hides because he sees them coming. So he hides. All three of them see him. They can see him, but he doesn't know that they can see him. And so they're like, Benedict is hiding over there. We're going to have some fun with this. And so they do. First of all, there is this awesome song that Baltazar sings. There's different versions of the song written, but it goes, sigh no more, ladies, sigh no more. Men were deceivers ever. One foot in sea and one on shore, to one thing constant never. Then sigh not so, but let them go and be you blithe and bonny, converting all your sounds of woe into hey, nonny, nonny. Sing no more ditties, sing no more of dumps so dull and heavy. The fraud of men was ever so since summer first was levy. Then sigh not so, etc. I think I remember. I know why I know this. I think I sang this in high school with my madrigal choir. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
Well, in the beginning of the movie that we can't recommend, Emma Thompson recites this. Like as a poem.
Yes, she does. She does. But I think it was turned into a, because, yeah, I totally remember, but that's been a hot minute since I was singing with the Madrigal Choir. Yeah. But yeah, it's good. Benedict has his own little commentary on the song. He says, had he been a dog that should have howled thus, they would have hanged him. I pray God his bad voice bode no mischief. I had as lief have heard the night raven come what plague could have come after it. He's just, it's like, well, that was horrible. Anyway, again, knowing that Benedict is hiding there in the orchard, they start into this dialogue. And it starts with Don Pedro. And he says, what was it you told me of today that your niece Beatrice was in love with Senior Benedict? And this is something that I love watching in the movies is seeing Benedict's reaction. He's like, what? It's like his ears perk up and he's like, they're talking about me. What are they saying?
I love it when they're like, somebody's listening and they're like, say something to the people, like, keep it up. We got this. Come on. Then they'll say something really loud that's like meant for the person that's hiding. It's just
yeah.
Fun.
Yeah. These little asides and then these very loud, purposeful statements.
Dock on, the fowl sits.
Yeah. They're like, oh, yeah, I didn't think she would ever love anybody. Well, but she does. She loves Senior Benedict. She loves him with an enraged affection. It is past the infinite of thought. Don Pedro's like, Well, maybe it's just fake. Leonato says there was never counterfeit of passion came so near the life of passion as she discovered. So back and forth, just talking about how much Beatrice loves Benedick. And Benedick is like, I would think that this was all an act, except that it's Leonato saying it. And he can't imagine Leonato like making something up and acting and pretending. So he's like, because he's the one saying it, it's got to be true. Which... So then Don Pedro says to Leonato, has she told him? And he's like, no, she never will. She'll be up 20 times a night and there she will sit in her smock till she has writ a sheet of paper. So it's like she's written all these letters almost to Benedick and then she tears them up. There is quite a bit of an innuendo in here. I will say that. Talks about how she writes and writes. And then all of a sudden she finds Benedick and Beatrice between the sheets. And so then she's like, feels awkward. So she tears it up anyway.
So like every time she writes, that's how they end up. And that's why she's
yeah.
doing it.
I guess. I don't know.
That's funny. I didn't get that. I mean, I was like, between the sheets, like of the papers. But I get it. Like she's up and she's like writing and every time. Anyways. Okay. Got it.
So they're like, yeah, she's never going to say anything to him. So Don Pedro's like, well, maybe somebody else needs to tell Benedick. They're like, no, he would just reject it. He would just torment her even worse. Claudia says, Hero thinks that surely Beatrice will die, for she says she will die if he love her not, and she will die ere she make her love known, and she will die if he woo her, rather than she will bait one breath of her accustomed crossness. So, like, there's no winning here is basically what he's saying. And then they start talking about Benedick himself, of course, knowing all the time that he is right there. Don Pedro says that he has a very contemptible spirit. Claudia's like, well, he's a very proper man. He has good outward happiness. He's very wise. He shows some sparks that are like wit. He is valiant. The managing of quarrels, you may say he is wise, for either he avoids them with great discretion or undertakes them with a most Christian-like fear. And again, they disagree. They're never going to tell Benedick, but they do say, we're going to send Beatrice to call him into dinner so they can sort of have like a one-on-one thing. Now that Benedick knows, like, knows, quote unquote, that Beatrice likes him, they want to watch and see how this interaction goes. So they leave, and then Benedick is just left stewing. He's like, it must be true. Hero's the one who told them it must be true. He says, they say the lady is fair. Tis a truth. I can bear them witness. And virtuous, tis so. I cannot reprove it. And wise, but for loving me. By my truth, it is no addition to her wit, nor no great argument of her folly, for I will be horribly in love with her.
It didn't take much.
It didn't take much at all. He's just completely turned because not a couple of pages ago, he's talking about how he's not moved if a woman is fair or if she's wise or if she's witty. And now he's like, oh, she's all the things. She's all the things. I like her.
It's like a teenager that finds out somebody likes them and then all of a sudden they return the love or whatever. It's like,
yes.
Oh, then you start looking at them like, oh, they like me?
Yeah.
Maybe I could like them back.
Yeah.
But he was quick.
Because you know that they actually liked each other that whole time. They just needed to a little bit of a nudge. And so he's like, I've railed against this for so long, but appetites change. I love this part so much. Shall quips and sentences and these paper bolts of the brain awe a man from the career of his humor? No, the world must be peopled. He's like, it's my duty. When I said I would die a bachelor, I did not think I should live till I were married. Here comes Beatrice. By this day, she's a fair lady. I do spy some marks of love in her. Oh my gosh, it's so funny. I'm sorry.
The other funny thing is, if you think about it, like, she's acting the same way to him
yes.
as she always has. And because she has no idea, nothing's changed for her. And all of a sudden, he's reading what she's saying differently.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Which means everything we understand that other people are saying to us is all just through our own.
Our own perception. Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. And that is such a good insight. And it's a really good way of interpreting Shakespeare in general. And an incredible thing that he has inserted in here for us to learn from. To be like, it's all about your perception. It actually is.
After reading just this section, I'm like, this Shakespeare might be a genius.
It's
I
very
do
common.
believe so. I do believe so. Yes. Because Beatrice does come out to invite him in for dinner. And of course, they have this very, it's brief, but she just acts like she's angry, at least from our perspective. She sounds like she's angry. From his, though, he quotes back everything that she says. He's like, ah, against my will, I am sent to bid you come into dinner. There's a double meaning in that. I took no more pains for those thanks than you took pains to thank me. That's as much as to say any pains that I take for you is as easy as thanks. Yeah, he just takes everything that she says, skews it according to his new perspective. It makes him happy. So can't argue with that.
My favorite thing at the end is he's like, I'm gonna go find a picture of her so I can keep it with me.
That's true. I will go get her picture. Okay.
It, maybe when I read it was like, he had to go get a picture made.
Yeah, it's not like they had photographs or something, so.
This is just so great. So, this is the beginning of Act Three. This is like basically the exact same thing that is happening, but the other way around. Swapping genders, I don't know.
Yeah.
So Hero is now in Leonardo's garden, and she's preparing to trick Beatrice into believing that now Benedick is in love with her. So Margaret and Ursula are going to help her. Now, I'm not as good as you because I don't understand as much. I can kind of understand what I'm summarizing, but that's about it. So
That's
I love
okay.
that you can put in the actual text, but I'm not there yet. So Margaret and Ursula are going to help her. They are planning to have a conversation that Beatrice will overhear, just like what just happened. Margaret then gets Beatrice to come down into the garden. Hero tells Ursula that Claudio and Dom Pedro have told her that Benedick is in love with Beatrice. So she's going to overhear this. Ursula suggests that Hero should tell Beatrice about it. And she's like, no, because then she's just going to make fun of him. And everybody knows that Beatrice is never going to soften towards him or towards the idea of him. So she'd just make fun of both of them, like Hero for saying it, and then Benedick. And then she'd break his heart. So don't tell her. She says it would be better to let Benedick keep loving her silently than expose him to her, to the wrath of Beatrice.
Yes.
Ursula thinks that Hero is wrong, that she's misunderstood Beatrice. I love this too. Like they subtly talk up the other person. So she's like, she's too smart of a woman to reject him. Look at how great he is, which when I'm watching the movie, I'm like, he's not that great. Kind of a, but okay. And then I love this, but she says, everybody knows that Benedick is one of the smartest and best looking men in Italy, except of course for Claudio. But then is it Margaret, I think, that says, no, he is the best looking and smartest man in Italy. So anyways, then so Hero agrees with that and then leaves Ursula. After Hero and Ursula leave the garden, knowing that they have tricked Beatrice, she comes out from her hiding place in the trees and she can't believe what she's just heard, just like Benedick. And so she decides to take pity on him and return his love. At this point, she's like, yeah, he's worthy. And I'm going to have to get rid of my pride and just love him back. What a quick change. How, what a
Again, another like quick turnaround. Yes. Jumping out of the garden into a room in Leonato's house. We've got Don Pedro, Claudio, Benedick, and Leonato. Okay. So it's all those original guys in the garden, only they are aware of everybody knows everybody's there. Benedick kind of starts off by saying, I am not the way I used to be. And everybody's kind of like, I think he's in love. And Claudio says, if he be not in love with some woman, there's no believing old signs. He brushes his hat in the mornings. What should that bode? And this is when we get it told to us that he shaved his beard because it says he's been at the barber. The barber's man hath been seen with him, and the old ornament of his cheek hath already stuffed tennis balls. So all that hair, which, ew, gross,
gross.
stuffed tennis balls with hair. But anyways, so yeah, he's been shaved completely. Also, this is really interesting. Maybe you knew this, but so they're just commenting back and forth. He must be in love. Look, he shaved his face. He looks younger than he did. And he rubs himself with civet. Can you smell him out by that?
Wearing perfume.
Yeah, but it's disgusting. Do you
Is
know
it?
what it is?
No.
Yes. Okay. So I was like, all right, we're going to look into this. A civet, I don't know if I'm saying that right. But it's basically this animal. It looks like a cross between a ferret, a mongoose, a cat. It's from Asia and Africa. And what they do is they like scrape the glands of its anus for its musk, because that's like an so gross, but it is widely used in perfume, apparently, even still today. Musk perfume. So whenever you hear that, like the musk in perfume, it's made by killing and or torturing of certain animals to extract musk from their glands. Civets are kept for years in tiny cages, and once a week or so, a horrifically painful procedure is performed where the musk is scraped from their anal glands. Who wrote that exactly? Probably PETA. But because the other, some of the things I just, that was just a screenshot I took real quickly, because some of the other things I read, it was like, that is the way they do it because it is a good base for perfume, and that is a much more humane way of doing it. So I don't know if it's painful tortures. I don't know. I don't have a comment on that, but that's what it is.
They use it today.
Apparently, yeah, still use it today. And back then, they would use that musk scraped from the anal glands of a civet to smell good.
Okay.
Have the musky smell.
There's no other liquid or that could take the place of that.
I don't know.
I'm saying, okay, I get it. We're in 1500 or whatever, but
yeah,
we're not anymore.
I know. But that's what I was reading, is that they used to just kill them, and now they don't.
Now they just torture them?
Now they just scrape their anal glands. Well, they said that that's a much more humane way to do it because they're not killing them. But I don't know if it's torturous or not. I don't know.
So I'd like to know what that ingredient is. And
I don't know. Watch out for it. Well, first of all, like, I, you know, watch out for anything that's musk. Because usually if a perfume is, it'll say musk on it, you know, like midnight musk or something like that. And there's always sort of that common underlying smell. There you go.
That makes me think of Elon Musk differently.
That's true. That's true.
Musk prefer anyway. Perfume near you. I just Googled it.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm like, I wanted to spend a whole lot more time just deep diving into these little things like this because I did not know that. Now I do.
Oh my gosh. It literally says this. Musk is a class of aromatic substances commonly used as base notes in perfumery. They include granular secretions from animals such as the musk deer.
It makes you wonder about like the musk ox, but apparently the civet is a big one too. And again, is it civet? I don't know. It might not be said that way.
Oh, it says most of the products are synthetic nowadays.
It's probably like the really, really expensive ones that have the
It's like real stuff. I went to a favorite things party at Christmas and somebody brought all these face products and one of them was like snail something.
Oh.
And, you know, the person who brought it was like, yeah, I totally use that. And then the person who like was supposed to go home with it was like, yeah, I'm not taking that home.
Can't blame them.
I just can't put snail whatever on my face.
On my face. Yeah. Ugh. Interesting. All this because they are noting all the differences. He's shaved. He's put musk on. He looks younger. They say he's like very melancholy. Instead of being so merry and just like happy-go-lucky, now he's suddenly very melancholy. And Claudio even says, when does he ever wash his face? Well, now he's washing his face and paint himself. I don't know exactly what they mean by that. But and then here's another one. It says, nay, but his jesting spirit. So he's not so just like over the top, crazy, witty, just saying whatever comes to his head. Claudio says, which is now crept into a lute string and now governed by stops. And so in other words, he's restrained by his new character as a lover because a lute string is governed by frets. Is that what it is? To make them stop the sound. And so he's governed by the fact he's in love. Right then, Don John comes in. And Don John says to them, hey, guess what? Hero is disloyal. He's like, you know, we haven't really been friends before, Claudio, but maybe you'll think better of me because I'm about to save you. He says, I came hither to tell you, and circumstances shortened, for she has been too long a talking of. The lady is disloyal. Claudio says, who, Hero? Don John says, even she, Leonato's hero, your hero, every man's hero, right? He's trying to really allude to the fact that she's very loose woman all over the place. So he says, Kay, go with me tonight. We're going to see her chamber window the night before your wedding. And if things don't happen the way that I say, you know, I mean, I'll be really surprised, but basically I will be saving you a lot of grief. This is where, like, I've never liked Claudio because he's so weak. He's just like, well, he says, if I see anything tonight, I'm not just not going to marry her tomorrow. I'm going to shame her in front of the entire congregation. Like, I'm going to make it a huge deal. And Don Pedro says, I'm going to join you in that. Okay. Wow. Go wild, I guess. So that's basic. That's the end of scene two. But so we had a lot happening there.
It's complicated, especially when you're trying to figure it out. Okay. This was my favorite scene. I loved it.
So funny.
It is hilarious. Like I said, this was like, oh, okay. And when it started, then I'm like, oh, wait, this is like comedic genius. The watch is the policeman for the town of Messina. And they're outside discussing their duties for the night. So you've got Dogberry, who is the head constable, and you have Virgis, and he is his deputy. Now, they take their jobs very seriously, but they're also totally ridiculous.
And yes, very dumb.
And hilarious. Dogberry is always getting his words just kind of wrong. Like, they're just slightly off. A lot of times they're the opposite of what he means. I was like, that reminds me of Slady was pleading or giving a statement at her sentencing trial or whatever, sentencing hearing. And she was trying to say the word I don't remember what it was, like retribution. Maybe, and she said like a totally different word. I was like, wasn't the right word.
Anyways. It does crack me up when people do that. And I just have to refrain from correcting them.
But I know. It's like, okay. That's kind of funny.
I don't think that means what you think it means.
This is just hilarious. So under Dogberry, the watch is very polite. And they are not very good at stopping crimes. He's giving the orders to his men, but they don't really have to do very much. Basically, when someone won't do what they say, they should just turn their backs and be happy that they got rid of them. He's like, well, don't forget to go into the saloons at night and make the drunks go home. Like, wake them up and make them go home to go to bed. Unless they won't listen to you. And if they won't listen to you, just ignore them. When they're done, when they're sober, they'll get up and go to bed.
Yeah.
They aren't supposed to make much noise in the street, so it'd be better if they just slept instead. They aren't supposed to catch thieves because then they would be mixing with dishonest men. And so it'd be better if they just let them go. This was my favorite. If babies cry, they should wake the nurses. Unless the nurses won't wake up, and then they should just let the baby's cries eventually wake up the nurses. I'm not sure why these guys are there.
They don't really know either.
No. No, so they can pretty much do anything they want, but at the same time, they don't have to do anything at all. It just as the only one thing they have to do is make sure that nobody steals their weapons while they're sleeping.
But the question is, what would they actually do if somebody did? Probably nothing.
Well, what was funny too was I didn't understand the wording, but it was like, hey, it's illegal to like keep a man against his will. He's like, okay, even if it's the prince, you need, and he won't stop, you need to stop him. But then you're supposed to get permission for the prince, so you don't have to do that either. Very funny. Okay, so they can pretty much do whatever they want. So the last instruction is that they should pay close attention to Leonardo's house because there's a wedding there the next day and there's like chaos going on and there's something wild is going to happen that night. After the bosses, Dogberry and Virgis, leave, then the men sit on the bench and are getting ready to go to sleep. They're interrupted by Baraccio and Conrad. Now, they don't know they're there. So they're talking openly, but they don't know that they are being heard. And so he tells Conrad about what had happened that night. Baraccio had made love to Margaret in the window of Hero's room, and Margaret had been dressed in Hero's clothing. So Don Pedro and Claudio had been hiding with Don John down under the window and had seen the whole thing. They believe now that Hero has been unfaithful to him. Like you said, Claudio is just kind of like, oh, okay. He goes with whatever the wind is telling him right now. So he believes it. And the next day, he's planning to humiliate her at the wedding ceremony in front of everybody. And so that's when the watchmen, they've heard all of this and they come out to arrest Baraccio and Conrad for lechery, which they mean is treachery.
Yes.
And then they haul them off for questioning. Some of the words in there were Hilarious. Commended was supposed to be apprehended.
Mm-hmm. He says be vigitant instead of vigilant.
And vagrom was supposed to be vagrant. And then, like, he says, you are thought here to be the most senseless and fit man for the constable of the watch. And he meant sensible.
Yes.
The opposite. Yeah.
And then, who think you the most desireless man to be constable?
Supposed to be desirable.
Yeah.
Oh, so funny.
Yeah, it is really funny.
Which the mix-up of words kind of continues, so.
Because they take Conrad and Baracho into custody, but the first watchman says to them, never speak. We charge you. Let us obey you to go with us. And Conrad says, okay, we'll obey you. Like, what? I think they were really like, what is even happening here? But
and I don't know. Like, you can get arrested for that?
I mean, it was the 15, 1600s.
Yes.
So they could get arrested.
Or anything. But yet, they aren't supposed to arrest anybody.
But they're not supposed to. Well, yes. But also, there's that little part where they are supposed to, unless they resist. It just so happens these guys didn't resist at all. So
right.
I guess it worked out for them. But they're also not supposed to mingle with bad guys. Who knows? Who knows what's actually happening? So, scene 4. We're in Hero's apartment, and it's the next day. We've got Hero, Margaret, and Ursula. And, of course, those men totally took advantage of Margaret. She had no idea that she was betraying Hero in the moment. She and Hero are good friends, you know? They're getting her ready for her wedding. So here's another thing that I looked up. It says, Margaret says to Hero, because they're getting her dress. She says, I think your other rabato were better. And she says, no, I'm going to wear this. So a rabato is, you can kind of imagine the style back then a little bit. It's a wide lace-edged collar of the early 1600s worn, turned down to lie across the shoulders or stiffened to stand high at the back and often open in front. Think about paintings you've seen of Queen Elizabeth. The big lace, sometimes it's up in the back. Sometimes it's down across her shoulders. So that's what that is. It can also be a stiff support for a ruff or standing collar. So it's any of those things. It's just, it's all about the big collar. So she's saying, I want to wear this other one. They talk about her gown and how it's more beautiful than the Duchess of Milan. And Hero says, God give me joy to wear it, for my heart is exceeding heavy. Margaret says, 'twill be heavier soon by the weight of a man. So there you go. There's more innuendo. But so then Beatrice comes in and it becomes evident that she is quite sick. She has a bad cold. But she says, look, it's almost 5 o'clock. It's time for you to be ready. Now, this is the part that I'm like, okay, I can't totally remember exactly what she means by this. But she says, by my troth, I'm exceedingly ill. Hi ho. Margaret says, for a hawk, a horse, or a husband? Beatrice says, for the letter that begins them all, H. I don't totally know what she means by that. Or if she's like meaning that she's really sad because of Hero being married off.
You're asking the wrong person.
Well, I don't know. So Hero's like, look at these gloves. They smell so good. The Count Claudio sent them to me. And Beatrice says, I can't smell them. I'm all stuffed up. And then we have some more inappropriate jokes. Margaret says, a maid and stuffed. There's goodly catching of cold, because it means that she'd be pregnant, but she's not. Anyways, she's like, no, look, I'm just sick. And so Margaret says, get you some of this distilled Carduus Benedictus and lay it to your heart. It is the only thing for a qualm. So now that is a thistle, which in this context, she's, you know, of course, it's a double meaning. She's saying use that to help with your cold. But in referring to that particular thistle, she's also referring to Benedict. Always trying to push some things there.
This cracks me up. You just reminded me of something. Okay. I took David to a Shakespeare in the Park. They do that here in Eugene sometimes during the summer. And
yes,
I had
some
no.
Of those are good.
Yeah, this was like years ago, and I had no idea about Shakespeare, right? And we went appalled. Innuendo and the like.
Oh, really? Maybe it's just because you don't expect it?
We did not expect it. You don't expect this from the 15, 1600s.
Yeah.
And it's full of it.
It's full of it. It totally is. And you have to go, well, guess what? They were humans too.
And
we're not special because...
In the book I checked out from the library that had like the English translation on one side and like the other one on the other side, It's there was a part where it's like, we just cut this out because it's just a bunch of like jokes, sexual men jokes.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, it was dudes writing it and it was dudes acting it. There were not even any women acting it. So, of course, they're just going to go crazy. I don't know what to say. Awkward Shakespeare in the Park. Jeez.
I don't even remember what it was that we saw, but
I don't think that there's any more than any random movie.
No,
so,
it's just something you don't expect.
Yeah.
If you don't know, I guess.
The prince, the count, Senior Benedict, and Don John, they're all there to take her to the church. So now we're on to, for some reason, I thought it jumped right into the next part, but it does not. That is scene five.
So. Yeah, it's pretty quick. These last two are really fast. So just as he's getting ready to go into the church for the wedding, Dogberry and Verges, they come and find him and they're trying to talk to him. They tell him that they'd caught these two criminals and they want to question them in front of him because he's like the governor, right? Mm-hmm. Or is it because it's about them either way?
Well, he is the governor, so it could be both.
And so maybe you'll have a bunch of this, but like they do a horrible job of communicating their message. They don't get across to Leonardo how Leonardo, I said Leonardo, Leonato, how urgent this matter is. And he kind of just like puts them off saying, I'm too busy today. He's like, go question them alone and then you can just kind of fill me in later. And so they go off to question them on their own and he goes into the church for the wedding. So that is scene five. So do you want to go into some of that? How they did a horrible job of.
Well, I mean, just the biggest thing is they just keep going off on all these things that don't matter. He's like, okay, we have something important to tell you. Leonardo's like, okay, tell me like quickly. And Dogberry says, well, this is good man Verges. He speaks a little off the matter, an old man, sir, and his wits are not so blunt as God help I would desire they were, but in faith, honest as the skin between his brows. And then Verges goes off on about how he's such an honest man, and they just keep talking about this, and Leonardo's like, okay, guys, hop to. And he says, look, you guys are being very tedious, and Dogberry evidently doesn't even know what that means. He says, if I were as tedious as a king, I could find it in my heart to bestow it all of your worship. So they go off on being tedious and everything that that means, and so the big thing is they just don't get to the point at all until like right before Leonardo goes, he says, our watch, sir, have indeed comprehended two auspicious persons. He means suspicious, obviously. And we would have them this morning examined before your worship. Leonardo has just had it. He's like, okay, if this was really that important, you would surely be able to communicate it, but you can't. So just take care of it yourself and let me know what happens. And again, Dogberry says, it shall be suffigance. Suffigance? I don't know if he means sufficient. I don't even, sometimes I'm like, I don't even know what he meant, but that was definitely the wrong word. So
he's not very smart. Funny, funny. One of my favorite things in here, it must have been my chapter that I was supposed to talk about it, but Don John's villains are going to be paid a pretty sum to do what they're supposed to do. Thou shouldst rather ask if it were possible any villainy should be so rich. For when rich villains need of poor ones may make what price they will.
Yeah.
Like if rich villains need poor villains, then the poor villains get to set whatever price they want.
Yes. In this case, the beggars get to be the choosers.
Yes.
How much do you need me? Okay.
Yeah. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, it's very good. It's building and we're about to get into some pretty heavy stuff here. And it is one of those things that I will say, like, I have never liked Claudio. I know I already said that. And it doesn't even matter how everything turns out in the end. I still don't like him.
You like Benedict more than Claudio?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Definitely. At least Benedict, he's a strong man. Claudio is a weak man. Sorry. Like, he totally is.
Just because he's like easily swayed?
Yeah, super easily swayed. He does not seek to know or to understand. And not only that, then he's like ready to completely, off of one thing, he's ready to completely destroy Hero, like destroyer. Especially at this point in time, this would not just destroy her, but destroy her family. Like she would be better off dead. And he knows that.
Yeah.
And he's willing to do that based off the testimony of a guy he does not even like or respect.
Next week, we will do the rest of it. Acts 4 and 5. I'm excited.
I know. That's crazy. And yeah, I'm excited. It's good. This is the exciting part. It's both the climax and the resolution all in one episode. Love it.
Do you know what our next book is?
Off the top of my head, nope.
I didn't either. Just look. Jane Eyre.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. There were already. Oh, I am so excited. Jane Eyre so much. Oh my gosh. Okay. Have I been reading? Yes. Yes, I have. Have I been reading anything new? No, unfortunately. Although I was so excited because I have been waiting for months and months and months because I was like, I need an audiobook because I've had all these audiobooks on hold for months and months. And finally, I got one yesterday. I'm going to listen to it on my run in the morning. That's what I'm going to do. So I'll just talk about this one. I don't know much about it. I saw it. Maybe you recommend it. I saw it recommended somewhere. Put it on hold. It's been on hold since I don't even know when because I don't remember putting it on hold. So it's called The Lost Queen. I don't know how to say the name of the author. It's Signe.
Signe or Signe something.
Yeah, that's what I think. Pike.
Yes, I've read that. But
okay,
you will like it.
Okay.
And Nan would like it.
Okay. But you didn't love it.
But you'll like it.
Okay.
Because you like history and you'll like it. And maybe I would like it if I read it now. It's been several years.
Oh, because it's Outlander meets Camelot in the first book of an exciting historical series that reveals the untold story of Langareth, a powerful and until now tragically forgotten queen of 6th century Scotland. Yes, now I remember. I was like, yes, I want to read that.
You'll like
Twin
it.
Twin sister of the man who inspired the legendary character of Merlin. Yeah, I'm excited. Okay.
I was going to buy it for Nan for her birthday, but I don't actually know when her birthday is.
You could get it anyway and just be like, for whenever your birthday is.
You need to read this. Yeah.
That's what this is for.
That's funny.
I love it. I'm sure she would love. Okay, well, I'll listen to it too and let you know what I think. It is 17 hours and it's on Libby, so I've only got a couple weeks. So
that on Libby, you can change it to 21 day checkouts.
You can?
Mm-hmm. Have you checked it out yet?
Why did I not know that? Yeah, I just did last night.
Okay.
Crap.
I don't know how I did
Why
it.
Why did I not know that?
I was able to change it to 21 days.
Oh my gosh. Well, why would anybody not do that?
I don't know. Because they don't know they can.
Because they don't know they can. Seriously.
Because okay. It stresses me out when they all come in at once. And so I like having more time. I don't know, because it's like if I have two or three in a row that I need to listen to, I need more than 2 weeks.
Well, that's true.
The book I've been reading, which is really funny because I didn't like the book you just said. I could see like I said, I could see why people would like it. It just wasn't for me.
Sure.
But this book that I just read is interesting because I read it like 2 or 3 years ago and I did not like it. And I read it again and I liked it.
Oh, interesting. And how awesome that you gave it another chance,
well,
even just a few years later.
Only because we read it for book club. And I was like, okay. I'm going to try it. The first time I couldn't follow it. It was just complicated.
And
got to the end, I was like, I kind of know what happened, but not really. And so I was like, I'm just going to give it a try. If I can't follow it, I'll just quit and tell them I couldn't follow it. I loved it.
Oh my gosh. What is the book?
The Midnight Library by Matt Haig. Have you listened to it?
Oh my gosh. That's one that I think it's on hold because I want to read it so bad. I hear about it all the time.
I liked it.
Okay.
So it's about this girl who like thinks her life is just not worth living. And so she decides that she's going to die. She's going to commit suicide. Well, I think she takes like drugs, overdoses. And she ends up in this library with this librarian that isn't like was her school librarian as a kid, but isn't really her school librarian. It's like a figment of her imagination, right? Mm-hmm. She's in this library with all of these lives that she could have lived. Like if you changed one thing, how would your life have like been different? And so, and the librarian tells her, you can like keep living these lives. Sometimes you'll be there for 2 minutes. Sometimes you'll be there for a few days or whatever, or months. And you get to decide which one you want to stay in. She tries out hundreds of lives and she can't like pick one, which to me shows you that like no life is perfect. There might be some
brilliant
things you like in a life and some things you don't. And, you know, and she has all these regrets and she learns like from her real life, but she learns like her potential. So like in one life, she's like an Olympic swimmer. And another life, she's dating a movie star. And, you know, she just kind of is able to see where she could have gone. Anyways, I liked it a lot.
That is wild. And that sounds amazing. I bet it was a lot of fun to write also.
Also, he had thought about committing suicide, the author. And so he writes books like this that are like, I don't know, trying to give people like other
some perspective. And
yeah. So eventually she does pick a life that she wants.
Yeah. And it's probably not perfect.
But it was really good. I loved it.
That sounds so good.
I'm going to have Audrey read it.
Even more. Yeah.
I think she would like it. And I told her the other day I wanted to read it. And she's like, oh, you were listening to that in the car. Like, yeah. Because I was trying to finish it before book club. And so I was driving to her school. And I was like, do you care if I listen to my book? I was like, trying to cram it in.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That sounds so good. I love that this time around you understood it so much better. And I can't help but think that a lot of it is because of all the classics you've been reading. It comes down to that again, just like what you're used to and like getting your brain wrapped around the more sophisticated language and understanding the syntax. And I love it.
I cannot remember the last book that I listened to that I didn't, that I had a hard time paying attention to. I'm getting better at that.
That is amazing.
I know.
Love it. Yeah, that's very, very cool.
Picking up like how I need to do things now that I'm not driving so much.
Yeah. So what have you kind of settled on? What's your routine?
Well, I bought a pair of earbuds for in the house. So I always have some in the car for when I'm working. So I can just, they're always there. So don't forget them. So I bought some for in the house. So I just have to put in an earbud. And like just whenever I think of it, I put one in. If I'm in the car for a few minutes, I listen. If I'm, you know, just whatever, I have to just fit it in. Yeah. Where before I didn't have to because I could just, I'd work for 12 hours on a Tuesday and I could listen to a whole book.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I'm going to work Tuesday, so this week should be easy.
Get in your book on Tuesday. That's right. Awesome. Well, and that's just, I just need to get back to that. I think I've just been like so overstimulated, overwhelmed, just so much going on in my head. And so I'm like, no, I just, if I have a moment to listen to, I just want to listen to music because then I don't have to think. It's just like, just transport me.
No, I get that. Sometimes you're just, there's so much going on. You just have to have like something to make your brain turn off.
Yeah. I think it'd be better to make it turn off in a good way in listening to a book.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with music, but yeah.
Music is like soothing in that, like, it kind of goes, like, it lets you relax. And like, if I turn on music, sometimes I have a hard time turning it off.
Oh. Yeah.
Switching.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's where I'm at right now. It's like, it helps me to feel all the feelings. Sometimes it makes me cry. And that's because that's what I want to do. A lot of times. Oh.
Somebody asked me one time, like, how do you get so much done? I said, I cry a lot.
Seriously, though. Oh my gosh. Because really, like, it's so. Such a release. And you know that you need to. Life is so hard. Can't even function if I don't cry. So, this may seem sort of counterintuitive, but it's not.
Sometimes you just need to cry.
We're so happy you joined us for this episode. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss Acts 4 and 5 of Much Ado About Nothing by William Shakespeare. If you have suggestions for books we should read and discuss, please email us at thebestbookspodcast@gmail.com. We would love it if you would leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. We want to inspire and encourage as many people as we can to read out of the best books.
As Thoreau says, read the best books first, or you may not have a chance to read them at all. See you next week.